We got a very special NBA guest, 16-year NBA vet, 3 medals during the Olympics. He now works for the NBA Players Association, Jose Calderon. What do we talk about, Big Ben?
Jose led the league once in three-point percentage, shooting 46%. He also made 87 free throws in a row. I can't make 4. Jose was a very underappreciated point guard, pick-and-pop guy, spent a lot of time in the NBA. He'll take us through that, as well as what else, Kaywin?
We talk a little Spanish. So for all of our bilingual listeners, you can hear a little bit more about Jose, Big Ben, and Kaywin, and what Jose's doing now after basketball. He's working for a foundation. He's doing a lot in the community. We even talk about the Olympic Spanish national team because the U.S. one is garbage.
Whoa, Big Ben and Kaywin coming up. Jose Calderon first. Listen in. Oh.
All right. Welcome to WSD. We have a very special guest, an international icon, 16 years in the NBA. Spanish national team, 3 medals, I believe FIFA World Basketball Cup, Jose Calderon, thank you for joining the show.
Hey, hello. No, thank you. My pleasure.
All right. It's bright and early here on the West Coast. I got my Real Madrid shirt on for you, Jose. Starting off, we want to talk a little bit about your three-point pose. Like, where did that come from? When did you start doing it?
Well, this is it's a funny story. Actually, it came out in a scrimmage and in practice. We were playing against the first team. We were just playing really, you know, having fun. We were killing them at that moment. My friend Derek Martin, we start just talking about it, you know, and yeah, this is, you know, just talking a little bit of a trash talk, if we can say that, just to be respectful. So we put that sign up. We like it. I just did it in the next game, and I don't know, like, guys like it, and I just kept it. And but that's how everything started. We're just in a practice without thinking about it, and I made my logo with that and everything. So it went a long way.
So Jose, I have a question. Tengo una pregunta. If I'm in my rec league game and I bank one in from 3, can I do this on the way back down to the court?
Yeah.
Will you allow me to?
They say, oh, yes. And there's been all ways of those 3s up. Like, the guys were changing everything. It was just one hand. It was 2. It was on the eye. It was on everywhere. So, I mean, it was something I was just doing for fun at the beginning, and after it was just like, I mean, you just get into the routine. So every time I hit that 3, I was like, okay, here it goes. So I was just going up, and my teammates were doing it in the bench, and I start seeing the fans doing it. We got some t-shirts. My bottlehead was doing this as well. So, I mean, we got the whole everything.
All right. Well, we definitely want to get more into that and your time with the Raptors. But first, we want to take our listeners back to how you got your career started and some of your international experience. So go ahead, Big Ben.
Yeah, you left your hometown of Villanueva de la Serena in Spain at the age of 13. Very, very young for basketball, even for soccer maybe. And you left and you went and played, nationally for the national team. What was your first experience playing professional basketball like at such a young age?
Yeah, so it works a little bit different here with basketball than in the U.S. Here, the clubs are like soccer, like you just mentioned, like there is all like the under 20s and under 16s and all those teams. So, yes, I'm from a small town, and I was signed by when I was 30 years old to play north of Spain in Vitoria, Basque Country. And so I started playing there. I played for 4 years, and at 17, I signed my first professional contract. So that's why I start playing with pros. That's why, it's almost like when you're in Europe, it's almost like you just have to mature faster because you start playing with, you know, people that are much older than you, and you just got to put everything out there. So it was a great experience. I was growing up every year trying to get to the next level, and that's how I started.
Were there any other sports growing up that you played that might have influenced your basketball game, or that maybe you wanted to pursue in the future as well?
I play soccer a little bit, or football, our football. I just so used to say soccer now. But I play football just because my friends were playing football. So when I was growing up here in my city, in Villanueva, I wanted to do basketball because my dad used to play. But at the same time, all my friends were doing football. So I was like, okay, I got to do both. So for a long time, I was doing both. I was practicing, you know, going to practice soccer. I went to practice basketball at the same time. But always basketball was in my mind as, you know, what I wanted to do. And I love it.
And was there anyone in the international team or within the international program in Spain that had a big influence on you coming up? Maybe someone that took you under their wing?
Look, what I always say this, when I get to Vitoria, when I was 13 years old, there was an American player called Elmer Bennett. Elmer Bennett was the point guard from that team in the first division. I was only 13, but in my mind, I always wanted to be him. So that's why I always say he was my kind of like the person I was looking all the time, because I wanted to be in the first team. I wanted to be Elmer Bennett. And I have the chance later on my career to play with him and be teammates. So it was great. It was a great experience.
Now, as you progress, when did it kind of come to some sort of realization that you had a shot at playing in the NBA?
Actually, the NBA was, I never thought about the NBA when I was growing up. I wanted to be on the next level. When I was under 16, I wanted to be on the under 18 team. When I was in the ACB, I was trying to be in the best team possible. I just got a call one day from the Raptors that they wanted me. I wasn't drafted. I was undrafted. So it wasn't a big deal for me. I was lucky enough at that time after, when you start thinking, I'm like, okay, I can now talk to everyone. So for me, it was a little bit later when I kind of like maybe did that big jump of maybe going to the NBA. I wasn't good enough to be on the draft. But I have that. I was lucky to being able to negotiate with other teams as well.
So 2005, 2006, that was your rookie year with the Toronto Raptors. Mm-hmm. That same year, Steve Nash was MVP. Chris Paul was a rookie, Allen Iverson, Chauncey Billups, Gilbert Arenas. Like, we could go on and on about the great point guards. At that point in time, how was the NBA game different than the international game?
It was much different. I think it's getting closer now, just because of the way the game is everywhere, with no as traditional basketball as we know, maybe, with all the positions and stuff like that. But it was a bit different for me. Like you just mentioned, some of those point guards I have to deal with every night. I was a rookie. I wasn't starting. I start for like maybe 30, 40 games that year. But it was craziness because it was people I was watching on TV the year before. It was Jason Kidd as well. So all those guys, now I'm playing against them. And even if I won a lot of things in Spain, when you get there, or in Europe, when you get there, you start from zero. So they have no idea who I was. I just wanted to earn my respect. So it's a lot of things going on in your mind, but you just, you know, just trying to play basketball and work out as hard as you can to compete against those guys that are idols until that day you play against them.
So during that rookie season, what was your rookie moment where you're just like, oh, wow, I'm in the NBA right now?
I think it was easy, but this moment will be for everyone. I was sitting in the bench. I played 12 minutes, I think, that game when Kobe Bryant scored 81 points. Wow. So let me just say, I'll say just that one. I was part of the Raptors. I was part of that rookie year of myself watching a guy scoring 81 points. I always took it as something positive. Everybody was asking me, oh, wow, 81 points. I'm like, look, I just witnessed something special. I just witnessed history. We were winning. It was, everything was good until the last quarter, where this guy kept scoring and scoring and scoring nonstop. And I think, you know, after, when I have the chance to talk to Kobe so many times, that game, it was always on my mind. It was on him too, but we were always joking around that day. And those 81 points is like, okay, this is serious. These guys are amazing. And in this case, Kobe was something else.
Something else. I was reading a book on Tim Grover, the legendary trainer who trained Kobe, Michael, and D-Wade. And there's a quote from Kobe, and he's like, what do you do? He's like, I put up numbers. It's like, yes, he puts up numbers all across the board.
That day was amazing, man. Like being there as a rookie and just witness that. I mean, yes, he was playing against me. We try everything. Impossible. It was amazing. And for me, it's always going to be one of those memories I always have, like, you know, just remember one of those games. So many games in the NBA, but that one, even if I was in the other team, I was lucky to be there.
Now, your first year, you guys won 27 games. Mm-hmm. And then your second year, you won 47 games for first place in the division. What was the difference between year one and year two? And please don't say it was the presence of Anthony Parker, our good friend.
Anthony Parker got a lot to do with it. But I think, as you just mentioned, I think it was a good combination of young guys with some vets that knew what was going on. So we have talent, but I think we got a great team. It was a great chemistry. We like each other. We enjoy each other. And that you could see that every game. And it was fun. It was really fun to play together. It wasn't just going to work every day. It was to let's go, let's get together, let's have fun. We played some, you know, great basketball that year, and everybody got their roles and they loved their roles. We were happy for our teammates to get good games, and that's the key to basketball. Like, I mean, when you get that, it doesn't matter how much talent do you have. It's just about working together to get a goal, and our goal was to enjoy and win games, and it was an amazing jump from, like you say, from 27 to 47, but it was really, really good just because of that.
Now, that same year, you guys went to the playoffs. You played the Nets. They had Vince Carter, I believe Jason Kidd, Richard Jefferson were all on the team. What was your first NBA playoff experience like?
You know, it's kind of sweet in some part because it was my first time in the playoff. We playing great. But at the end of the day, we lost. We lost. We had the home court advantage, but we couldn't. I remember the last play was a pass for Chris Bosh to force game seven, but we couldn't, and we lost 4-2. But it was great. It wasn't a great experience. The fans, Toronto, we were getting back to the playoff, and that was a huge deal. But it was just tough. It was hard, but we were ready for the next one. We tried the next year again, but it is tough when you lose. You always play to win games. We thought we got a chance, but we couldn't beat those guys. You just mentioned Vince Carter, Jason Kidd, Kenyon Martin, Jefferson. So it's not like they were a bad team. We thought we could beat them, but they were amazing. They were a great, great team at that time.
So, Jose, you talked about kind of sharing with your teammates, and you hit 19 assists twice a game. Take us through a game in which you're just in the zone from kind of seeing things play out, or what did you feel going into those games where you came away with nearly 20 assists?
Yeah, for me, it was always just looking at my teammates, too. I knew who was on fire that day, and if they were scoring, I was able to run plays for them be able to say, okay, this guy is making shots. Let me get him open. So that was my role. It was just trying to create the space for these guys and make it that pass, and not just fancy pass. It was just the pass they needed to score. And that was the key. So I was able to connect with them, like just with a quick look. I knew Chris Bosh, what he wanted to do, and in the exact moment. And every time I was penetrating, I knew Anthony Parker was in one side, or Maurice Peterson, or everybody. So I knew where everybody was. And that was the key for me. So I was just, I was able to find those guys just because of that. So just creating those plays to get them the easiest shot as possible. So that's what I wanted.
Did anyone ever tell you at 19 and you were looking for 20?
I don't remember that. I guess so. It was so many games. I got a couple of, I think, 18 as well, or 17 or whatever. And it's tough when you get to that number. And assists are kind of, they work funny sometimes. Sometimes you start the first quarter and got six right away, and you're not able to get an assist in three quarters. So it's weird. Sometimes when you start looking for them, are even more difficult. Even if the guys are trying to hit shot, they will miss. So it's better to just keep playing. So that was my key. Is like, look, I don't know if we were up or down or whatever. You just got to keep playing basketball. If you get to 19, that means you were doing the right thing. So don't think about trying to, let me see what I get the 20th, because it's not going to work. You're going to get one guy open. Guys are going to try to get quick shots to give you the 20th, and they will miss. So don't do it. Just play your game.
So during the 2008-2009 season, you set an NBA record for the best free throw percentage in a season. And this wasn't 9 out of 10. This was 151 out of 154 attempts for 98.1%. Take us through, if you're giving me that same direction, take me through your pre-shot routine, because I'm about a 60% free throw shooter right now.
I always say this, Luca, like the thing is like, actually the free throw should be the easiest shot ever. Like you're not moving, you have no defense. So it should be the one, the automatic one, like the mean, you're not thinking about when you brushing your teeth or something. So I always tell this, I always talk to the kids and say, just trying to get a routine that makes you not thinking about what's going on in the game. So I don't need it to know if we were up or down. All for me, every free throw was important, but I was trying to count and say, okay, I'm gonna dribble it three times. So I was counting 1, 2, 3. So I was able to disconnect for what was going on during the game. The problem was when I was like 80 something on a row. So now people are talking too much. Now
the media is asking questions.
Media's asking questions. I remember being in Sacramento and the guys in the speakers in the arena, they're talking about it. So everybody's even yelling, you know, harder. So the noise was crazy. Guys are getting close to you and saying stuff like, hey, I just bet the $100 that you're going to get to 100 or that you're going to miss in the next one. So now it's too much stuff. So no, it's not only the game. It was getting to a point where everybody got a comment. And it was tough. So I was smiling. I was losing focus. It was difficult. The last few days when I was, I ended up with 87 in a row. And it was tough because of that, because guys were just talking and, hey, let's go, Jose, just miss this one. You're not going to miss until next year. So just give us one. it was just like comments like that. And it was fun. It was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. And I was able to end the season with those. With just these three misses. Even my coaches, the last couple of games, don't penetrate, don't get fouled, don't get to the line. Like, you okay with this? We don't want you on the line anymore. So it was amazing. Yeah.
So it wasn't just your free throw prowess, but also your 3-point prowess throughout your time in the NBA, and you hit 7 3-pointers in a game. So a couple times. And the last time was coming against the Mavericks back in 2014. Where was your favorite shot, the 3-point? Were you like out the pick and roll? Do you spot up in the corner? Where were you most comfortable?
Not really. Not that many of pick and roll. I think it was more out of maybe a swing and be kind of like in the 45 angle there. That was my best shot all the time. But it was a little bit of everything. At the end of the day, there is so many out there. I wasn't like a volume shooter, so you know, so yes, I got games with when I got up 5, 6, or 7 threes or whatever, but usually I was a 2, 3, and when we were playing, threes were okay, but it wasn't like now. If I was playing now, I think I gotta go up like 15 per game or something at that point. on my good years, I will be shooting so many because of the way basketball is now, but yes, it was just something I work on, like same with the free throws. Like my first year in the NBA, I think I was a 14% 3-point shooter, so 1-4. So I got like 7 out of 64 or something on my first year. So I was terrible at the beginning, and you know, I needed to change that, and I took pride on that and say, look, this is not happening again. The guys were going under. I'm like, this is not basketball. I got to make shots. So I changed my mechanic a little bit, my shot, and I end up like winning 1 year the percentage. And that's another funny story too, because that year I'm competing with Stephen Curry and with Kyle Korver, but I didn't know them yet. I just play against them. So you know, I think it was my last three games, I didn't play because I got something on my elbow or something, and I was in Detroit. We not making the playoffs, so the doctors are like, don't play anymore. So I find out like Kyle Korver when I was a teammate. He's like, I'm watching the games and you're not playing and I needed you to miss one or two here. So it was like a competition, you know. And at the same time, I'm watching the games as well because the last game, Stephen Curry have a chance to beat me, to beat the both of us. I don't know if he ended up second or third, but he needed to do, I don't know, 7 out of 10. For other people, it's crazy. For Stephen Curry, 7 out of 10, it could be any other night. So I'm like, okay, this is it can't happen. So I'm watching that game with the Warriors, just trying to see if this guy is going for craziness in three or not, just to being able to hold that little piece of something. So and after, when I was talking with him and or with Kyle Korver or whatever, it was a funny story as well. So it was amazing.
So we're going to pull up some YouTube clips here shortly, and I agree with you. I think there's a clip we'll show where you mid-range jumpers, and you were with the Knicks, and we'll get into it. But let's when you talk about three-pointers, what was your move where you knew you could get open or free up for a three? Was there a way someone was guarding you at the time that you knew you could get a look, or kind of something that triggered in your head where you're like, okay, I got to move where I know I can get some space?
Yes, but even like that, my it wasn't my big thing, like trying go by people. I wasn't in the NBA. I wasn't the best. I wasn't the quickest. I wasn't the fastest or whatever. So for me, it was more usually was through something. So I use the pick and rolls. I use the other teammates just to being able to get open or handoffs or so. It wasn't for me. It was difficult to just out of like dribble trying to get my shot off. From three, from two, and attacking one side or another, I was able to do. But from three, it wasn't like my big thing. So I used a lot my teammates to get open for sure.
46% 1 year, 46.1. I think you might have made it by that 0.001% maybe. So congrats, that's awesome.
Thank you.
All right, it's time for some videos. So as I pull this up, I'll ask a question. So 2011, it was the NBA lockout. The season started late. You guys opened up against the Cavs December 26th. What do you remember about that game?
I don't remember much. Let's, I don't know.
All right, because we got something for you.
I remember being in Spain working out like crazy.
Hold on. Because someone else remembers that game.
Yeah.
All right. You guys see my screen?
Yep.
Oh, I know now.
So I don't know if you can hear it, Jose.
I can't.
So this is Kyrie.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So Kyrie's talking about his first game after the NBA lockout. He's playing you guys, and you kill him. And he can't do anything about it. And then ever since then, he's like, I got to go at Jose because he got me my first game.
And he did. And he did. It's true. He went at me every other game I play against him, and you know, we talk about it. And he was always I don't know. I didn't know he was remembering that game, but I mean, it was amazing. It was a great game. But I mean, I wasn't doing nothing crazy. It was the way I was playing. I'm not a guy doing anything. You guys watch a little bit of my games, and I wasn't like just talking to him or something. I never did that. It was more of whatever. I was just playing basketball.
So our next, talking about big games, our next game is when you went off for 22-9 against the Lakers. And what I love about this is it comes back to two things. One, you got a lot of buckets on mid-range pick and rolls, which, you know, in this day and age is rare. But also two, I think you had an impression on Kobe in this game, because you look at his reaction as we go through this. You pull up on him right there and make a bucket. And then as we go through these highlights, What's going through your head in this game? Are you in the zone against the Lakers?
Yeah, it was one of those games that I knew I couldn't miss. I mean, it was something. I felt so comfortable. For me, it was so easy to. I knew if I was the ball was going up, I was able to make it. Like that was how confident I was. And after, yeah, we just getting the assist to my guys to the Mar there. But I remember the game. It was 22 on this one.
Yes,
22-9, I think.
22-9.
I don't know if I got 30 on them one day too.
It seemed like you had some good games against the Lakers throughout your career.
I remember this one because Kobe was like, I remember that one in a timeout, Kobe saying, I got Jose when I watched, did the replay. He was, he's like, yo, I got him.
Oh, so that's some respect
there. I was so happy. I was so happy on there. And after it was Steve Nutt that I thought always was kind of like my idol on what I wanted to be as a point guard. So it was always, and Pau Gasol, the Spanish guy in there. So it was so many, it was always a lot of motivation in those games.
Yeah, I think there's one point in this clip where you watch Kobe's reaction. He's like, man, this guy is just on one tonight. Like, can't stop you. And that's good a diamond. Landry Fields benefited on two dunks, I think, in this game from you. That's past your friend, totally. Paul.
Then they tried to blitz you on the double.
Well, step back. What is that like just to see teams like, wow. Jumping.
Look, I got it. I was getting fancy in there and everything.
Yeah.
Look at this. Hey, look at this lamb here.
Yeah. Yeah. Did Paul go? I've never seen you hit that shot before.
Landry again.
One. That one with Landry Fields, I got it. Like, I don't know how many times I got that back door with Landry. It was so easy. He was always there in the right place. Yeah.
And then I think we got a couple more here.
Well, in the beginning, they were in drop coverage on the pick and roll. Then you started hitting all those shots. They started to blitz you, and that's when the lane came open.
Jose, I must say, what I like about your game is fundamentally two hand passes. Great vision.
But that one.
But except that one.
No, I think I always was trying to. I was able to make every kind of passes. Sometimes. The two hands are, you know, depending if it was a full court or something like that. It was about, for me, it was about just hitting in the right spot. You know, it wasn't about making a big pass or a fancy pass. It was about trying to get my teammates open. And that was my shot, going to the left, kind of like a heading back, fading away a little bit.
And I think this was the dagger right here. You can see Landry just go, yeah, we got this. Big game.
So there is another one with 30, and I think it was against the Lakers too.
Oh, we got a,
I think so. I think so.
We got a special one against the Lakers. Let me bring this up from your Nick days.
Oh yes, I wasn't happy that day.
Game winner.
Here Wait, we you go. Weren't happy?
Look at my face. Look at my face. You see, I remember this one. I don't know what happened that game. I was pissed.
So, it's funny you say that because I was like, does he know they just won the game? He's not smiling right now.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what happened. So I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'll shoot it and I win this game. Like, that's what I did all the time for sure. Right. But look at that. I just scored there. Spike Lee going crazy because he was there. I look at me, I'm like, yeah, let's go home. <It's> like, yeah. And it wasn't for me. The play wasn't for me. It was for, as you can imagine, it was for Carmelo. We almost lost the ball. So not a lot of chance. It was just...
No, okay. I have to make a comment here because I actually had to go look and see who was defending you. I think it was a rookie. On that
he
team.
He was Huertas, the Brazilian kid.
Yeah, Huertas, yeah. He was a rookie year, and it looked like you did a little Michael Jordan, Byron Russell there with the off-arm push-off.
It was a quick stop there. He couldn't push his brakes. But we almost like Robin almost lost the ball there.
So you look at the clock, go, I gotta do
the clock
something
there, and
game time.
Buckets.
Not happy.
Look at him. Like nothing happened. Look at this guy.
Yeah, it looked like you wanted to walk straight through TSA and get back to New York after that game.
No, I don't remember exactly what was going on, but I remember that everybody told me, why were you wanting like jumping or something? What happened? And I'm like, I don't know. I was pissed or something. I was like, let's get out of here. I don't remember. But it was fun.
So, Jose, we have a segment called the West Coast Swing in which we just talk about some, you know, your career, ask you some questions that I think will elicit some good responses from you, hopefully some funny ones, but just some background. So you had a great career with the Spanish national team. You won the FIBA World Cup in 2006. You won silver medals in 2008 and 2012 in the Summer Olympics and a bronze in 2016. You also won the Euro basketball title back in 2011. So we'll have some questions in and around that. The first one we have for you, you guys won the FIBA World Cup back in 2006. What did you do to celebrate after that win?
Everything. We did everything. I mean, it was, and you know when you win, but it's almost like you weren't expecting that at the same time. It was weird. It was a huge, like, we have a great generation. We were getting better every year. But we weren't the favorites to win, so we were just going game by game. And when we just show up at the final, and after we got Pau Gasol got injured in the semifinal, so everything went the wrong way until we won and going back to Spain, and people were waiting for us, and it was something amazing. It changed basketball for our country, and that day, you know, we always remember because it was just the buzz, the party, the people. It was amazing. It was a really good time for everybody.
Like Ben said, you got three medals throughout your time playing in the Olympics. What was your favorite pregame meal during the Olympics?
Man, the Olympics is tough. Food in the Olympics is not what people think. And that's where I always say this. Look, there is guys just getting ready 4 years to be in the Olympics. You take care of your body, your food, what you eat, how you rest. And after you go to the Olympics and you got a huge buffet there with all kind of food, but it's for 1,000 people, for a lot of people. So it's not going to be like what you used to eat at home. So eating if like some stuff is good for sure. But yeah, we're trying to always do the pasta and the chicken and just go as safe as possible. It's not the day. A pregame meal is not the day to try new things. So
I'm going to share my screen for this one because I think this might be a friend of yours. But I want you to talk a little bit about this guy, Rudy Fernandez. Oh, yeah. So this is his highlight reel of his top dunks. So talk a little bit about Rudy and maybe his time in the league or any dialogue you had, because this is what he was known for, getting above the rim and you know, throwing some down. I think he was in a couple dunk contests.
And that's part is from Sergio Rodriguez too. He was in Portland as well. So he was great, man. He is still great. He's still playing. He's part of the national team going to the Olympics now. He got some really good moments in the NBA. I think he never got the chance to really play long, like a lot of minutes. And that's why he decided to go back to Spain and play for Real Madrid and be the main guy. But talent-wise, yes, he could play in the NBA for, you know, no problem. But it was just those situations where when he got to Portland, he got Brandon Roy ahead of him. It's tough to see Brandon Roy. And that Brandon Roy, his career was short, but it was amazing what he was doing. So it's just bad situation for him. And that's why he decides to go back to Spain. But he's an amazing player for sure.
Another one of your teammates that many people in the States may not know him that well, but you do, is Felipe Reyes. How would you describe his game to someone who has never seen him in the NBA or has never seen him from the States?
Look, Felipe, he announced his retirement like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Okay, he's 40 now. where I tweet that day and say, thank you for everything. You are a legend. Now there will be rebounds for other people. for the rest of us. So Felipe Reyes, the best thing I can tell you is like, he fought every game like crazy. And for whatever reason, I don't think he really jumped, but he got every rebound. Like, crazy. Even if he hit three bouncing on a head of someone and after the rim, he end up with a basketball. So he was like a magnet, you know, for the rebound. So Felipe was amazing. He got talent. He could shoot the ball. He got better with his shot going when the career got going. But yeah, like not really tall, amazing rebounder, really good role or short pop. So yes, I think same thing. He was always with a big role in Real Madrid. So sometimes it's tough to make that jump when you're already in a huge role and winning a lot of titles in Europe. But yeah, he was a great, great player. Maybe one of the best like that never came to the NBA.
So we've already, another maybe a paint cleaner or glass cleaner that we've already talked about his brother a bit and Paul, but give us the best word of advice his brother Mark may have given you or your experience playing with Mark growing up.
Mark is he grew a lot as a player with the years, no? But I mean, he's one of the most complete players. He got one of the highest IQ guys I play with. He could pass, he could shoot the ball, he could control the timing of everything. For a big guy to being able to handle the ball and control the timing, the tempo of the game that well is not usual. So that's what, and after in defense, same thing, without really moving fast, but he was in the right spot every time. So it helps. It helps when you play with these kind of guys.
You played a lot with Powell, and a lot of people know about his scoring and rebounding, but what would you say is the most underappreciated part of his game?
I mean, Powell always got a great shot. He was really good in the low post. He got so many moves in the post, and after he was stronger than people thought, and great hands. Same thing. Those two guys for big guys, they were handle the ball. They could dribble. They could pass the ball. So I would say that. I could say that low post, he was great. That turnaround shot, it was so tough to block because he was so tall and. And he was able to shoot from really, really high. They're both, man. They what a couple of brothers. Amazing.
So let's talk about Jose, the national sports. And we saw this during the Euro Cup. So many people watching the Euro Cup. Describe for me a football game between FC Barcelona and Real Madrid. And I'm a Lakers fan. How are you going to describe that game to me?
I mean, with the Lakers, I would say maybe the Clippers. I'm trying to say, okay, let's see, but bigger. I don't know. Right. It's tough to explain because I still think like football is more of a culture. It's more than just being a fan. So you just create everything. So now you're playing against the two biggest city in Spain, where you got two of the teams that won all the time or most of the time, and the best players are there, and you know the whole world is watching, and everybody is watching that game. Doesn't matter, even if you don't like those teams, you're watching that game. So it is amazing. It could change the season for those two teams. Losing that game is tough, but it's tough for a fan too, because losing that game, you know, you're going to the office and you're gonna be until the next game. You're gonna be a loser for a long time. So it is important for your team to win because it's gonna be, man, every day. Every day can end up with yes, but we beat you yesterday or we beat you last week. So that's kind of the deal with Barcelona Real.
So Ben and I have both been to Spain separately. I've been to Barcelona and Madrid. Ben's actually done running with the Bulls in Pamplona. But if we go back,
that's where I thought you got your three from. I thought you were doing the Pamplona Bull.
I'm not running. I couldn't because of my profession. But yeah, I just leave that for you guys.
My wife wouldn't let me run either, Jose. So I sat in the Coliseum and watched everyone came in. But
those Bulls are something else.
So I'm going to go a little off script here. So how would you compare the city of Barcelona to the city of Madrid?
I would say Barcelona is more like Miami. Okay. I would say Madrid is more of a Washington kind of a DC kind of like city. It's the capital, it's more of a serious city with all the government buildings. Barcelona is on the beach, it's more of a layout. It's so I would say that will be the best comparison. Maybe because New York is different just because the way New York is built. LA is different because it's so spread out. So I would say maybe that downtown Miami could be something of, the area of Miami could be Barcelona, and Madrid and Washington. I think they are a good fit there for a comparison. Yeah.
So we have the Tokyo Olympics coming up. The Spanish national team, you're in Spain right now, has a mix of very talented veterans along with some NBA prospects. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about maybe something our listeners wouldn't know about the Spanish national team and those players, and then what will be the key to Spain winning a medal in Tokyo?
Well, we got, like you say, I think it's a mix, a really amazing mix, because we saw some guys for this generation we talk about. We got Rudy Fernandez that play in NBA. We got Sergio Rodriguez that's still playing in EuroLeague in Milan. He was in Portland and Philadelphia with the Knicks. We got Mark and Pau Gasol. And after you got the new wave of, well, you got Ricky Rubio as well. But after you got the new wave of both brothers, Hernan Gomez, the one in Denver, the one in Pelicans this year. We got Garuba, that is could be top 15, they say, maybe this year, in this next year draft. So there is a really nice combination of guys. And we've been there before. I think for us, it's not about the talent. It's about we know how to compete in these kind of tournaments. And that's why we won in 2019 the world championship again, just because we knew how to handle those kind of games and the experience of being there before. More than I don't think we were the more talented team, but you know, it's a 40-minute game. We slow that thing down and we can handle it.
So my next question: what younger player? He can either be on the national team or maybe off the radar. Are we not talking about now that you think in the 2024 Olympics may have a chance to surprise some folks and get his name out there?
The young guys like we see now are Abalde. Abalde is in the national team now. Alonso is a point guard from Real Madrid that I think he will be drafted maybe next year, maybe. I think they say in second round this year. I think he will be better maybe in a year than now. We got another guy playing for Valencia now, Aróstegui. So there is the three or four guys. Garuba, like I say, Garuba is they think is going to be a lottery pick this year. So those are the guys. We still got like a younger guy, 15, 16 year old that they look really promising. But so we're good. But Spain is always getting these one, two guys per year that could be in there. So hopefully we keep that going.
So Jose, let's talk a little bit about life after basketball. I think looking at your foundation website, you're doing a lot of great things for your hometown and giving back there. And so tell us a little bit about the foundation and really what you're setting out to do for your hometown. I saw that you had a basketball camp recently. You're grooming young talent, probably teaching them a lot of things. And then I'm very interested in Put a Cap in the Bottle and what you're doing for, I think, Spain as a whole, which is a huge problem in my opinion, and you're addressing that. So maybe touch on both those things for us and tell us more about what you're doing after basketball.
Yeah, so the foundation is about kids. I think they are the future. They will be the ones who can change the mistakes that we made in this society and in the world. It got to be through education, and that's where everything has to start. For everything we want to talk about and get better at, it got to be through them. And that's where we focus. And like you say, like I always say, like the basketball and the camp is like the excuse to get people from everywhere around Spain and get them together from different cultures, different kind of families, and just talk about it and knowing each other and how things are done different, even if you are in the same country. And Even you can think different, but that's okay. We can respect each other and being able to learn from that. So I always say that, like, we got great basketball players. We got people that never played basketball before in our camps, but that's okay too. And that's the message we always try to send. And like you say, and after we trying to be in the schools, the cap, ponle un tapón al botellón, put a cap in the bottle, or a block, just playing with those words. It's about drugs and alcohol. I think it's mm-hmm. important in young age. I think early and earlier guys are drinking. And it's not about just it is good or it's bad or it's, you cannot do that. It's about, do they really know what are the consequences of drinking at that age? Do they really know what's going on with drugs and why it's important to get all the information that we can provide them and how to handle that? So we are in a lot of schools on our area just talking about that, talking about guys. It's not just because we as adults are saying this is bad. It's just because this is what do to their body at that age when you are still growing. This is what happened. This is the consequences. This is how dangerous it is. The driving, the going out. There's a lot of things you got to take care of and being able to get that information and educate yourself. And same thing with the schools. We do the same thing with nutrition. We do the same thing with physical activity. It's not just about doing sports. You can do mm-hmm. physical activity just going to a school and walking or going upstairs to the school and not using elevators or just having fun. So we're just trying to let them know how important it is for all those little things and values that through sports or through experiences that we have, we can let them know. And, you know, just being there, hopefully some of those guys, we can help them. They can, they want to see or do as I did before. And that's kind of like the key. And that's why we're trying to educate them.
I amounted to, you know, your foundation is really laying a foundation for these kids to be successful, which is very cool to see. So I commend you. It's awesome how many people you're influencing. Oh, and honestly, I was going to ask you if I could apply to be a volunteer. One, because I love Spain. My wife loves it. I can speak Spanish, Jose. So yo tomé 8 años de español en escuela secundaria y colegio. Pero no, nunca practiqué en el estadio o mi ciudad de Seattle porque no hay personas que pueden hablar conmigo, unfortunadamente. Pero quiero trabajar contigo, con los hijos en baloncesto.
Cuando quieras, nosotros siempre estamos buscando gente. We always looking for people. So anytime, you come to Spain. It'll be cool. You can, you know, there is one more thing. We, you know, these kids need English as well. So, you know, you could do both and you could help us send the message and how important is to do that. We actually in our camp, the last 2 or 3 years, we get people from United Kingdom. There is a team always, they come to us. We get their coach and the coach, he only go with the Spanish players. And the other kids go with the Spanish coaches. And they speak English. The other guys, and they got to figure it out, and it is important. So we open to all those kind of everybody's welcome for sure 100%.
And I think I can help them defend the pick and roll, and I understand how to box out too. Back to Felipe, it's all about understanding where the ball is going to come off the rim and making sure you're in the right place.
Perfect, no problem. Awesome.
Yeah, no, that's a great foundation. I would try to speak Spanish right now, but you'd probably laugh at me. I always say, yo estudio español para 4 años. No entiendo bien, no hablo bien. That's the extent of my Spanish.
Bueno, that's better than a lot of people. So you just got to keep working on it, like everything else. But that's a little, you know, there is people who goes with only 2 cervezas, por favor.
Cool. Well, thanks again for everything. We do appreciate it. The next time we're out in Spain, we're going to see if we can help out with the foundation and see if you'll have any recommendations of where to go in Barcelona as well.
Oh, yes. No problem.
Thanks. Jose, thank you.
Thanks, Jose.
Thank you.